I am Planta on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. There's a fascinating book out now, one I found interesting and hard to put down. It's called You Could Live a Long Time, Are You Ready? Since life expectancy in this country is rather high, 80.7 years, they say, many seniors are unprepared on numerous levels, and what with the boomers set to enter their senior years in big numbers, this is a useful book with anecdotes and suggestions on various topics, such as growing older emotionally, physically, and financially. The book's author, Lindsay Green, joins me now. She's a sociologist, author, and researcher with experience in the media by helping found the Inuit Broadcasting Corporation, coordinating the Federal Women's Film Program at the National Film Board, as well as other research projects with the World Bank, TD, TV Ontario, and UNESCO, among many others. Her website is at lindsaygreen.com. The book is published by Thomas Allen. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Lindsay Green. Good morning, Ms. Green.
Good morning, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Is growing older something that you're afraid of?
Well, I wasn't. I have to say it didn't cross my mind like so many boomers. I just assumed I'd stay young forever. And what happened is, I guess I was looking at the titles in the bookstores and saw lots of titles that were encouraging us to live a long time and giving us tips on how to live potentially forever. And at the same time, I was spending time in long-term care facilities with my aging parents and aging aunts, and saw a lot of people who we could deem to be successful in terms of having achieved a long life. But I wasn't sure that that was the way we needed to go, wanted to go, and I thought maybe we had to rethink this whole thing.
And if we read the book, will we be more prepared?
I like to think so. And I have to tell you, one of the great things about doing this interview with you now is because the book has actually been out for a couple of weeks, I'm starting to get feedback from people who are actually doing things as a result of reading this book. So there are definitely some people out there who are ready for it. And as they say, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, and we're all at different stages, and some people are going to find this is just what they need right now.
And I found the anecdotes in the book the best way to get some of the information that you're putting out there.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that.
And you interviewed a lot of people for this book, right?
I interviewed 40 people who were identified as role models, and this was an interesting process because I figured we had a lot of negative examples of aging badly, which was leading to a lot of fear and anxiety about aging. And so I said to people like you, do you know anybody over the age of 75 that you would consider to be your personal role model, somebody that you'd like to grow up to be like? And it was as open-ended as that. And through that process, I identified 40 people. I wanted men and women. I wanted them coast to coast. I wanted a range of income levels, a range of educational levels. And I didn't want them to be really world-famous people that we could kind of say, well, they're kind of exceptional, so I don't think anything that they've done really applies to me. So I wanted it to be as applicable and relevant as possible.
But there were some famous people, right?
Well, there's some known names. There's some public figures, names that you would know of. And what was interesting is in many cases they were really interesting examples of people who had taken fascinating paths. And I can't say too much about that, and I'll tell you why. Because the interviews were all anonymous, and I promised them that because I felt that what was out there for us to read now was really sanitized versions of people's lives, because a lot of this is very personal, and there's lots of sorrows and joys, and we cried through a lot of these interviews, but it's not necessarily the stories that people want out there associated with their name when you Google them. So that was my promise to them, that I would not I would change their names in the book, and so their proper names, who I interviewed, is all listed in the acknowledgments, but their names that are associated with the anecdotes are all changed.
What were their ages? I mean, the 40 that you interviewed, they range in age, don't they?
They do. They range in age from 75 to 100, and half of them were in their mid-80s. And a lot of people have said to me, well, that's such a huge range. I mean, how can they have anything really much in common? Aren't those stages so completely different? And this was one of the most fascinating findings for me, is we have to throw out this whole concept that chronological age should be used as a proxy for anything Certainly can't be used to tell us what a person's mental acuity is, what their physical ability is, whether they should still be on the job, whether they should still be driving a car. Chronological age is virtually meaningless after the age of 65. And certainly psychologists will tell you that there is more diversity after the age of 65 in terms of physical and mental abilities than there is at any other stage in life.
We're talking on Monday afternoon. It was just announced that Tony Parsons, the longtime news anchor at Global, who retired last year, he was semi-retired for about 4 or 5 years, I guess, and now he's anchoring a late-night newscast in Victoria. He was announced today that he's going to anchor the CBC Supper Hour newscast here, and he's 71.
That's fantastic. I'm delighted to hear that, and I think this is the wave. We're basically going to be seeing people taking on new careers or just changing tracks in a career path that they're already on. And I think it's a really exciting time for people of all ages to see that they're not bound by how old they are.
And retiring at 65, people in the boomer bracket, is that not happening as often now?
It is not happening as often now. And one of the things that's so interesting about the future is we change it every day. So even looking at historical data on this, I think, is meaningless, because people that I talk to are simply saying, I am not retiring. And that is certainly the cumulative advice of the seniors that I interviewed, was we have to retire the entire concept of retirement. It is outmoded, outdated. It's not good for an individual. It's not good for society. And if you're in a job you hate, you know, people say, well, that isn't good news for me. But it's far better to recognize that now and do something different.
I guess one of the reasons why people still think of the 65 model as ideal to retire is because of finances. And you talk about what one should do financially.
Well, there is a lot of information out there on finances, and what I try to do is filter through it and recommend what I felt were some really good resources. And there's really kind of two themes. One is you definitely need to plan, but it shouldn't be just this kind of terrifying principle of amass as much money as you possibly can. You can be very strategic about how much you need for the lifestyle you want. And that's really the second piece of advice, is match your income to your needs. And you can really can adjust it at both ends. So I've got know people, for example, who retired and have some pension, but it they like to supplement it. I have a friend who's over 75, and she loves horseback riding. So she's now selling jewelry and paintings when she wants a new saddle or something that she needs for her horse. I have my old high school English teacher retired, and he's now the marketing manager for a children's theater company. So the money is an important part of that, but so much more important is the learning, the engagement, the opportunity to keep your hand in and learn new skill sets. It's just a way to stay vibrant.
A lot of people get consumed by, as you said, amassing as much money as possible, right?
They do, and that was one of the things that alarmed me, and I probably was an impetus for doing this book, is because the message is primarily out there in the media. We have to remember are driven by self-interest. I mean, yes, the messages come from people who would like us to invest money with them, and there's nothing wrong with that, but we just have to remember that that is only one message. And I'd like this book to be a bit of a countervail to that, to say, really, we need to have a retirement emotional circle plan. That's what I call it, which is really an emphasis on friends, family, having the right partner, which we need to invest in equally. And we'll be drawing on that as we age, as much or more as we'll be drawing on our income.
Cultivating new friendships, you just mentioned that. Is that hard for people who are of a certain age already to get out there and make new friends? I guess for someone my age, in my late 20s, I think, you know, cultivating friendships now would be the goal.
Well, you know, I think you may have heard this. I have. People will say, I have enough friends already. And that is a really frightening thought, because certainly the elders that I interviewed said, if you take that principle to its logical conclusion, you're going to be in trouble because the friends you have now tend to be the same age as you, and so they will die off. And so what you have to do, both for your mind and staying engaged and keeping up with current events, is to get young friends and a mixture of friends, and friends that maybe you didn't even imagine incorporating in your original circle just because they had different worldviews or came from different backgrounds. They kind of mash it up. And I think this is probably easier for younger people now because of the way that you've grown up. But for older people, people tended to stick in their little circles. And these really wise seniors were saying, get out of that mindset, that it's really important to get out there. And one of the reasons that it's hard is that sometimes you lose your self-confidence and you're not the person you used to be, and maybe you don't think as quickly, maybe you don't move as quickly, and you're anxious. And so they were saying, get over it. Get a grip on your pride. Have the courage to launch in and say to a young person, what's that iPad you're working on? Show me how it works. I don't understand it. Can you say that again? That was too fast for me. But basically say, you know, I want to understand what's going on. I want to hang out with you and see and stay engaged and vital.
There's an anecdote in the book. Some guy, I can't remember his name now. He was trying to keep in touch with this friend of his, and he phoned her on her cell phone.
Right.
And he caught up with her. She was at the park, I guess, with her grandchildren. She takes a photo with her cell phone so that he could see where she was, and then emails it to him.
Yes.
Do you see a lot of seniors doing that, staying active online with cell phones, Facebook, and the sort?
You know, it's really starting. And I think what we're seeing is a real branching out that's really widening the gap between the seniors that are going to be really able to age well and those who aren't, I have to say. Because what you do if you cut yourself off from the new technologies is you isolate yourself very often from your own family. So families are more often posting stuff now on Facebook, the grandchildren's photographs, and a number of people have told me that if their parents are not online, they just really can't keep mailing them copies of photographs, sending them written letters. They just don't have enough time. So they say, unfortunately, they are losing out on this continual flow of update of what's happening.
I experienced that this weekend on Facebook. Someone added me. And I didn't know who they were, but we have mutual friends. So I go to her profile, and there's a photo there, and then, you know, you look at the information, and she's got her birth date there. She's 93.
Oh, that's fabulous. Well, you know exactly what I'm talking about. She's one smart cookie.
Yeah. And then you look at, you know, you look down her profile, and then you see some of the notes she's left and think and the sort, and you know, she's pretty with it and pretty hip to how it works. Do you think that people who are successful at aging, that do all the things that are good in this book, from the experiences of the people you talk to in this book, do you think somehow, and I know this sounds stupid, but do you think they know how long they'll live? I mean, in preparation for that, perhaps, that they know that they're going to be X number of years?
Well, it's a non-stupid question. It's a very interesting question, and I think what you have to do is plan for a long life. And UB Blake, who was a jazz musician in the early 1900s, 1920s, he died at about 96, and he said at that time, if I had known how long I was going to live, I would have taken better care of myself. And it's a great line, and we have to move forward assuming that. We have to assume that we very well may live into our 90s, into our 100s. There's a number of online calculators I talk about in the book. If you go onto those, it is interesting. I mean, you have to be prepared for a long life. Now, it may not happen, lots of things, and you can do everything right, and it's not as this book, it doesn't tell you how to live longer. And so, you know, there's a lot of people say, oh, well, you can do everything right, and then something will still happen to you. This isn't about that. This is really about saying, yes, you should actually prepare your body, your mind, and keep engaged as though you were going to live a long time. And hopefully you will, but you may not. But at least you've lived fully while you were actually waiting.
Yeah, and thinking about death, is that something a lot of people you talk to think about?
No, and that was the really interesting thing. They're not afraid to die, and that was one of the things that they keep emphasizing as as some quite negative interviewers will say to some of the role models I interviewed, well, you know, you surely have thought about your death because look how close you are to the end. But these people are living so fully in every moment that, yes, they're not in denial about dying, but they certainly don't think about it, and they don't worry about it. They certainly, I think none of us want to live with pain and suffering. But there is a sense that we will be able to have some control over that. And I think we boomers are certainly going to make some more changes around pain and suffering at the end so we can ensure that is not a fate for anybody. But no, they do not worry about dying and are certainly living fully every single minute.
We tend to think that nursing homes are bad, I guess. But in your experience and some of the people you talked to in the book, people close to you, the experience was not so bad, right?
Well, it's really true, and it really varies. Because if you're living alone in a house without any friends, family, stimulation, you're probably not taking very good care of yourself physically, mentally, and certainly there's now research that links Alzheimer's to that state. So a person like that, if they then are brought into a caring, loving home environment, then they will thrive. And so there are situations where individuals' lives are actually improved by being in the right setting.
Your Aunt Jean, you opened the book with her.
Yeah.
And that's a fascinating story. She what was her deal? She lived at home and she decided to go to a home?
Yes, and she was one of those single women, never married, had a very full, rich life with her extended family and many, many friends. She was a primary creator of an emotional circle, was a great giver, and was always on the receiving end of gifts as well. And she genuinely loved people, loved life, and so as a result, people loved her back. And so she didn't want to be a burden on anyone. So when she lived in an apartment by herself and got care coming in from a group called the Community Care Access Center, which does encourage and support people to stay in their own homes as long as possible. But then she started to fall, and she didn't want to end up with a broken hip and not being able to reach somebody in time. And so she made the choice to move into a long-term care facility, and she charmed the people who were setting up a brand new facility. She got into one of the best new facilities because of her ability to make friends. And when she got there, she was at age 87. She lived there for 3 years until she was almost 90 when she died. She became very good friends, mainly with the staff there, because the residents weren't really quite at her mental ability. And her best friend when she died was a 27-year-old manager, a part-time manager, was a student. And he was brokenhearted at her death because she was a confidant for him, a role model, and someone who gave him fantastic life guidance.
And you've been traveling the country on tour for this book. We're pretty lucky in this country. I mean, seniors, if you grow old here, there are resources available to them. If they need someone to come into their house, say, and do the cleaning, right?
There are, and I think this is the biggest message from these seniors, is ask for help. Don't let your pride get in the way, because if you accept help, you will probably be able to retain your independence longer. And that was one of those kind of oxymorons in this book, is by accepting help, you will stay independent. And if you don't, if you deny your needs, then you will not age well.
And as you travel the country, do you find that there are things unique to certain areas on how to grow old successfully?
I think
do we do things differently here, say, than perhaps where you're from in Toronto, maybe?
It's a very good question, and I don't know that I can answer that, because I certainly see examples of wonderful, vibrant seniors everywhere. And I guess the real issue, I think, right across the country that we have as a population generally, is that we don't engage enough with our seniors. So when I ask people who is your role model over the age of 75. A lot of people couldn't name a single person they even knew over the age of 75, let alone have somebody that they really wanted to emulate. And so, and I'm pretty similar in that. I was before I started this. So, yes, I had certainly knew my family very well and was very engaged with them, but I didn't have a lot of older friends who were that age group. And so that's been the biggest delight for me is I've called these book launches Recognizing Our Role Models and have asked everyone who comes to the book launch to bring their own personal role model. And so in Toronto, we had 200 people and 50 of them were role models to people over the age of 75 and two were over 100. And it was quite remarkable. And a lot of people who were there said, I have completely rethought my whole attitude towards aging as a result of meeting these folks here tonight. It is amazing.
And have our attitudes on aging changed because there are so many different cultures in this country now?
I wish I could say that it has, but that some people have said to me the only depressing part about this book is the section on how stereotyped seniors are. And I fell into that category. When I was doing the questionnaire for these seniors, I showed it to a young psychiatrist, and she said, oh, you should ask a question about what's good about growing old. And I thought, well, that's a good idea. I didn't even think of that. And then I said to her, well, what do you think's good about growing old? And she said, not a single thing. And I was really shocked at that. I wouldn't have gone quite that far. But I'm really delighted to report that she's completely wrong. And not only have I been influenced by the individuals that I've seen, but the research shows that there are some real benefits to aging and that this is not just all about loss of youth, loss of mental capacity, loss of physical ability. It's about a new stage, new opportunities, new strengths. And if you don't hang out with older people, you don't know that. And so you just see people in a stereotypical way, on the street, in the subway, on the streetcar, sitting on a sidewalk bench, and you just don't speak to them. So you really have no idea how completely engaged and vibrant and alive they are.
What are you working on next?
Well, it's really interesting you ask me that, because this is the Boomers' next big issue. People are really fascinated as I tell them what I'm doing next, because I'm looking at housing and where aging boomers will live, and not just the geography and the location, because it really is finding community. And a good number of boomers feel that they don't have enough money to age well in place in terms of actually paying for a roof over their head that will allow them to continue to live the way they are now. And they want to know how they can do that. And so I just remind them, you know, this is not about amassing money to live in a really fancy penthouse. This is about finding community, about finding people that you can share an ongoing life with who will care for you and you will care for them. And so I'm looking at very many different examples of that, because it's starting now. So people living in co-op environments, people who are sharing with extended families, people who are taking in young boarders, people who are joining different kind of faith communities, people who are joining or who are retired actors who are living, people that are musicians living together. There's a whole bunch of very interesting models out there now, and it's time that we started looking at them seriously.
As I said off the top, this is such a great book. I've enjoyed reading it and enjoyed talking to you today.
Thank you. Me too, Joe.
Yeah, you're very welcome. The website for more is lindseygreen.com. Do visit that site. You can continue the conversation there. There's a lot of blog posts and the sort on there. The book is called You Could Live a Long Time, Are You Ready? It's published by Thomas Allen in Vancouver. Lindsey Green on the line. I'm Joseph Planta.